Chapter 9. Born Again, Taobao and the Humiliation of eBay. Among China's leading businessmen, Ma is known for his bombastic comments. He routinely uses eBay as a dartboard while simultaneously praising it as one of the companies he most admires. San Francisco Chronicle. The pioneers take the arrows, settlers take the land, is a phrase often used to describe the conquering of the American West. As a new frontier known as the Internet unfolded in China, Jack was determined to become one of the settlers. He'd already been a pioneer with his early experience of going online in Seattle in 1995. But with his first Internet venture, China Pages, he'd taken an arrow from his state-owned partner, leaving the portal pioneers, Wang Jidan of Sina, Charles Zhang of Sohu, and William Ding of NetEase, to become the settlers, the first Internet entrepreneurs in China to lead their companies to an IPO. To close the gap, in September 2000, Jack invited the three portal founders, plus Wang Zhentao, the chairman of consumer e-commerce venture 8848, to a martial arts-themed business conference entitled Sword Discussion by the West Lake, Shihu Luanjian, that he hosted in Hangzhou. I chaired a roundtable discussion at the event, held to promote the city as a Silicon Paradise. Jack announced that Alibaba would move its China headquarters from Shanghai back to Hangzhou. This was designed, no doubt, to please the governor of Zhejiang and mayor of Hangzhou, who were among the local dignitaries in attendance. But I quickly understood that the event, in particular the participation of the four leading Internet figures of the day, was convened to demonstrate Alibaba's continued relevance in China's Internet sector. Even though the company had not yet secured an IPO, Jack wanted to stay in the limelight. Jack pulled this off with a clever idea, inviting VIP guest Jin Yong, the Hong Kong author who had been an inspiration to Jack since his childhood. He knew Jin Yong would be a big draw to the other Internet founders, too. Shortly after Jack's Hangzhou gathering, two of the four China Internet pioneers were felled. Wang Zhentao, the chairman of consumer e-commerce pioneer 8848, was forced out by investors nervous about the mounting costs incurred to overcome payment and logistics hurdles. Wang Jidong, the founder of Sina, was deposed in a palace coup, victim of the company's fractured and fractious shareholder base. Now only Jack, William Ding, and Charles Zhang remained at the helm of the companies they had founded. Alibaba was surviving, but the business-to-business e-commerce model he had chosen to follow was proving a struggle. In the closing months of 2002, as Alibaba edged toward profitability, Jack started to look at a new direction for the company, targeting China's consumer e-commerce market. Two models from the United States stood out, Amazon and eBay. Mimicking Amazon, 8848 had already folded, but two other domestic e-tailers, both set up in 1999 when they had successfully raised venture capital, had survived, selling books and other products at fixed prices. Dangdang.com, run by co-founder Peggy Yu, who had started her career as an interpreter and secretary at a boiler manufacturer before studying for an MBA at New York University, and Joyo.com, founded by Kingsoft's Lei Jun, later of handset vendor Xiaomi fame, and run by Diane Wong, Wang Shutong. Xiaoibo. eBay had proved an instant investor hit with its September 1998 IPO, its valuation growing from $2 billion to $30 billion by March 2000. Numerous entrepreneurs in China launched ventures that aspired to be the eBay of China. Most prominent among them was a charismatic wunderkind from Shanghai called Xiaoibo, who had founded his firm, EachNet, after returning to China in June 1999 from Harvard Business School. EachNet quickly pulled ahead of the other China clones. To launch his consumer e-commerce attack, Jack opted to go the eBay route, setting up a contest with EachNet. But in Xiaoibo, known as Bo to his friends, Jack could very easily have met his match. Bo came from a modest background. His parents were teachers. His father sparked Bo's interest in mathematics with a deck of cards. Bo recalled, "With 52 cards and scoring a king as 13, etc., the deck adds up to 364. My father hid one card and asked me to add up the rest. If I did it right, I would know what the hidden card was." Bo practiced relentlessly. By the age of 12, he could add up a deck in 12 seconds. After winning more than a dozen high school mathematics competitions across the country, Bo became one of the first students from mainland China to be admitted directly to Harvard College on a full scholarship. After graduating, he worked for 2 years at Boston Consulting Group before returning to Harvard and enrolling at the business school. While Jack had already settled on business-to-business e-commerce, Bo looked at a range of U.S. internet businesses that might work in China and found that the only business model that got me excited was eBay. Before leaving Boston, Bo auctioned off his unwanted possessions on eBay and in June 1999, then 26 years old, returned to Shanghai to build the eBay of China. Before he even landed, he had raised almost $500,000 in funding. Nonetheless, my parents thought I was nuts to turn down very lucrative job offers and a green card and become self-employed, Bo recalled. I was very naive and totally unprepared for business in general and the huge challenges of bootstrapping a startup company in particular. Bo rented a cheap apartment in Shanghai and hired a high school classmate as his first employee. Unemployed, his friend was the only person he could afford. Unable to shell out on expensive engineers, he arranged for two employees of the Shanghai Electricity Bureau, who had some IT experience, but had never built a website, to moonlight for him. After 5 p.m., when they got off their shift at the electricity utility, they came to the EachNet apartment and worked until 1 a.m., sleeping there before they clocked in back at their day job. Soon after, Bo convinced a fellow Shanghai-born Harvard Business School classmate, Tan Haiyin, to come on board as co-founder. Before business school, Tan had been one of the earliest employees of McKinsey in Shanghai. After Harvard, she had taken a job at Merrill Lynch in New York. She was traveling on a business trip in China when Bo called her up to ask her if she wanted to join him and stay in China. She agreed. Bo attracted the attention of foreign media early on. The Washington Post quoted him vowing that EachNet would gain even greater dominance in China than eBay has achieved in the U.S. Bo quickly commanded the attention of investors, too. The angel investment was followed swiftly by a $6.5 million venture round. I got to know Bo soon after he returned to Shanghai. We were neighbors on Hongshen Road in the city's former French concession district. Despite his impeccable resume, Bo lived modestly, moving in with his parents. This was seized upon as a sign of his humility, although greater attention was given in local media to the fact that this handsome Harvard Business School returnee was still single. Although a relative latecomer to the China internet scene, he made an instant splash and moved to quickly outmaneuver his rivals. Bo doesn't suffer fools gladly. In 2000, on stage at an internet conference in Shanghai at which we were both speakers, Bo demolished a rival who had just given a presentation stuffed with inflated website traffic and exaggerated transaction data. Bo calmly but methodically exposed all of the flaws in the other presenter's math and logic, demolishing him so effectively that the audience almost felt sorry for the hapless competitor who did not ride out the dot-com bust. EachNet, by contrast, bucked the downturn and surprised everyone by securing a massive $20.5 million investment in October 2000. The lead financier was Bernard Arnault, the French luxury baron of LVMH, via his dot-com investment vehicle, EuropatWeb. But as the market crashed, the fund got cold feet and tried to pull out entirely. It finally ponied up $5 million. Bo demonstrated his considerable powers of persuasion by cobbling the remaining $15 million from existing investors and others, even as the public equity markets continued their downward slide. China was entering its Internet winter, but each net had gathered a large stack of acorns. Yet making a viable business of each net would be no picnic for Bo. Could the eBay model really work in China? In the United States, eBay became popular for offering goods through online auctions, with the transactions often taking place between consumers themselves. In China, although people loved to haggle, the trading of secondhand goods, even offline, wasn't common. Shoppers were just beginning to exercise their newfound freedoms. Few people had many possessions to sell. In the United States, eBay served an online population of more than 100 million and could count on a well-developed credit card market and reliable nationwide courier services. In China, the much-vaunted online consumer market of 10 million was a mirage. In 2000, it was too early to build an iron triangle. Few people could pay online or access reliable delivery services. More fundamentally, there was a complete absence of trust in online shopping. Banking regulations restricted the development of credit cards, which were only allowed in 1999, their use restricted to customers who kept money on deposit in their banks. Debit cards were beginning to gain popularity, but each bank issued its own card, and there was no central processing network for merchants. Forget about online payment, even buying offline with cards was a mess. Checkout counters at the time were a tangle of cables connecting or powering a half dozen individual point-of-sale POS machines. Online payment was years away from becoming widely accepted. Courier networks were restricted to individual cities. There was no China market to speak of, just a loose collection of local markets. The absence of trust, though, was the biggest hurdle to greater consumer e-commerce adoption, as Bo described. In the U.S., if you place a bid, it's a contract, and by law you need to fulfill that bid if you win the auction. That's very clear. People would be afraid of getting sued if they did not abide by that contract. In China, people don't care. I place a bid, I don't want it anymore. Tough luck. In response, EachNet limited its initial auction offerings to the city of Shanghai, where it had set up physical trading booths for customers to meet. Having first connected online, they would come to meet one another in person to evaluate the goods on sale, ever mindful of being defrauded, then pay for the goods face-to-face. EachNet had to lease and operate multiple trading booths across Shanghai, clearly not a sustainable strategy for a supposed internet venture. By early 2001, they were all shut down. EachNet had to find new ways of making money, and so acquired a distributor of mobile phones and launched auction platforms on NetEase and Sina. To broaden its appeal, EachNet started selling stamps and baby clothes. But with no new VC funding at hand, Bo had no alternative but to find a way to get around the roadblocks to online shopping, the problems of payment, package delivery, product quality, and people's confidence. Combining payment and package delivery was one popular method. Cash on delivery allowed consumers to see before they paid. EachNet set up a system for courier companies to act as collecting agents. Cash was a stopgap solution, but by 2002, bank cards were finally becoming a viable payment option. China still had very low credit card penetration, but the use of debit cards was exploding. Bank cards grew from 150 million when EachNet was launched to over half a billion cards by the end of 2002. The bank's IT systems also started to talk to one another too, because in 2002, China's banking regulator rolled out a unified card processing system called China UnionPay, Chongguo Yinliang. UnionPay's red, blue, and green logo is today a common sight in shop windows and on ATMs around the world. UnionPay solved a major headache for merchants in China, both offline and online, in making sure they could accept a customer's card no matter which domestic bank had issued it. The process didn't happen overnight, though, and for years, EachNet encouraged its most active customers to apply for credit cards from one of the big four commercial banks, to ensure that they could complete their purchases online. As Bo had pointed out, China's legal system offered few protections for merchants, who worried that customers wouldn't pay for goods already shipped, nor for customers, who were worried that the goods they purchased might never arrive. To address this, EachNet set up its own escrow service, where it would collect funds from customers and release them only after delivery had been confirmed, charging a 3% commission as a service fee. Few customers signed up, however, and with an eye on the success of PayPal in the United States, EachNet drew up plans for its own local equivalent. Product quality issues were also tricky to overcome. In the States, eBay had pioneered a system that allowed consumers to rate vendors. But in China, unscrupulous vendors quickly figured out that they could game the system by using masses of fake accounts to drive up their positive ratings or dilute their negatives. EachNet tried to limit the number of ratings one user could post and set up a team to investigate consumer complaints of fraud, but both efforts were rapidly overwhelmed. A key challenge was how to identify the buyers and sellers on its platform, never mind implementing any sanctions. EachNet clearly was in for a long haul, not projecting any profits until 2005. EachNet's prospects of raising new venture capital investment dimmed further. Bo and his investors realized that their best shot at making EachNet the eBay of China was to sell out to eBay itself. eBay comes to China. In the fall of 2001, eBay CEO Meg Whitman made a trip to Shanghai to meet Bo. In March 2002, EachNet once again surprised the market with a landmark deal, announcing it was selling a 33% stake to eBay for $30 million. Despite EachNet's challenges, eBay had been impressed by what it saw. The EachNet website had more than 3 million registered users, of which over 100,000 visited the site each day. The company had expanded from Shanghai to Beijing and Guangzhou. More than half of its business involved a party outside one of these cities. The site featured more than 50,000 items at any time, ranging from clothing to real estate, and offered by fixed prices or via auctions. Transactions exceeded $2 million a month. EachNet was tiny compared to eBay, but the allure of China was of critical importance to Whitman. She badly needed some good news to reassure investors after announcing just 1 month earlier the loss of the Japanese market to Yahoo Japan, backed by Masayoshi Son's SoftBank, a blow to Whitman's ambition to build eBay as a truly global marketplace. From $750 million in 2001, eBay was targeting $3 billion global revenue by 2005. Japan would have been a big step in achieving this, with more than $1.6 billion in goods traded. But eBay was late to the party there, launching only in February 2000, 5 months after Yahoo Japan. eBay's strategy was a mess from the start. In Japan, eBay charged commissions, but its competitor, Yahoo Japan, did not. Credit cards were still a rarity in Japan, but eBay required customers to use them to register on its site. eBay chose a Japanese CEO and a local partner, NEC, with little experience of the internet, charting a rapid course for irrelevance in the country. By the summer of 2001, it had garnered a measly 3% of the market. When in February 2002 eBay pulled the plug, its site offered just 25,000 products, compared to the 3.5 million on offer from its rival Yahoo Japan. In the land of the rising sun, the sun had already set on eBay's ambitions, and the company laid off its staff. Where next? eBay had more success in South Korea and Taiwan, but only China could really move the needle. By 2002, China's internet population had grown to over 27 million, the world's fifth largest. Whitman was earlier than many on Silicon Valley to recognize the importance of China. With the demographics and incredible changes in China, our hypothesis is this could be one of the largest e-commerce markets in the world, she told the media, projecting $16 billion in e-commerce revenue by 2006. eBay had failed to understand the needs of local customers in Japan, but Whitman was determined not to repeat the experience in China. they wanted to back a leading player in the local market. EachNet was an obvious target. eBay Senior Vice President Bill Cobb later commented, "Bo had studied eBay up one side and down the other and had really tried to adapt a lot of the eBay principles to the market." It didn't hurt, of course, that Bo and his co-founder, Tan Haiyin, had both attended Harvard Business School, Meg Whitman's alma mater. Yet eBay didn't just want to back EachNet, it wanted to buy it. The initial deal gave eBay one-third of the company, but also an option to take full control, which it did just 15 months later, taking its total outlay to $180 million. Rebranded eBay EachNet, the company became a vessel for eBay's China aspirations. The decision to own EachNet outright set the stage for Alibaba's triumph and eBay's humiliation. Things looked good at the outset. With EachNet, eBay gained a 90% share of China's consumer e-commerce market. But within 2 years, eBay was reduced to irrelevance in China and forced to beat another embarrassing retreat from Asia. Why did things go so wrong so fast? Even though Whitman had granted Bo a generous allocation of options, making EachNet a subsidiary inevitably changed the dynamics with managers at eBay. Soon after the acquisition, for family reasons, Bo had to move to California, which Meg Whitman was very generous in facilitating, as Bo had recounted to me in 2015. He stayed involved in the business, but the long distance between San Jose and Shanghai started to show. With Bo no longer in Shanghai, the head of marketing in the United States began to tell marketing in China what to do, and the head of technology did the same. With the acquisition, eBay had dented EachNet's entrepreneurial culture. The damage was revealed when another entrepreneurial company arrived on the scene, Alibaba. Worse still, Alibaba had the backing of SoftBank, the author of eBay's defeat at the hands of Yahoo Japan. One senior EachNet engineer, who would soldier on for several years after the acquisition, summed up the critical problem. eBay thought it was a done deal, but it turned out it was not. eBay had a leading position at the outset, but the market was growing so fast that all that really mattered was grabbing the dominant share of the millions of new online shoppers. Incremental users, not incumbency, was the name of the game. In his B2B business, Alibaba.com, Jack had trained his firepower on Merle Hinrichs at Global Sources. For his new consumer e-commerce venture, Jack set his sights on a much bigger target, an icon of Silicon Valley, eBay and its CEO, Meg Whitman. Squaring off. Alibaba launched its preparations to enter China's consumer e-commerce market in 2002, initially as a defensive move sparked by eBay's entry. As Jack later explained, "I needed to stop eBay to protect Alibaba." Although EachNet was targeting consumers, not the businesses served by Alibaba, Jack was concerned that some of the larger merchants active on EachNet could encroach on Alibaba's turf. At that time, there were only two companies in China that understood online marketplaces, eBay and Alibaba. I was particularly concerned that eBay's power sellers would grow their business to compete in the B2B space. Jack's plans to target consumers encountered resistance within Alibaba. The B2B business wasn't yet profitable, and the VC market was closed for the time being. Could the company really afford to open a new front when they were still fighting the B2B battle? Was Jack just being paranoid? CTO John Wu adamantly opposed the idea, visiting Jack the night before the new project was kicked off. John warned Jack that the move would harm Alibaba. "How on earth could you fight against eBay?" Jack replied that the market was still open. "There are 100 million internet users today, but only 5 million people are doing online shopping." Jack's ambitious plans for Alibaba also gave him a different perspective. "eBay wants to buy the Chinese market, but we want to create China's internet trading market." With his first-hand experience as a small business owner in Zhejiang, Jack was adamant that the threat from eBay was real. In China, there are so many small businesses that people don't make a clear distinction between business and consumer. Small business and consumer behavior are very similar. One person makes the decisions for the whole organization. Jack also understood the temptation for eBay, later reflecting, "We launched Taobao not to make money, but because in the U.S., eBay gets a lot of its revenue from small businesses. We knew that someday eBay would come in our direction." So it was decided. Alibaba would target the consumer e-commerce market. Jack was emboldened after a trip at the end of 2002 to Tokyo, where he found Masayoshi Son in a buoyant mood. Yahoo Japan had just repelled eBay from its shores, boosting SoftBank's standing after several painful years of dot-com write-downs. SoftBank signed up to commit $80 million to Alibaba's new venture. The project was kept highly confidential. Few within Alibaba were even aware that the idea of targeting consumers in China had been contemplated, let alone that a team had actually been formed to code a new website. Secrecy, and some useful Alibaba folklore, was achieved by sequestering a handful of employees, including Alibaba co-founder Toto Sun, in the original lakeside apartment where Alibaba had been founded. 2 years later, Jack recalled the scene as he invited a half-dozen hand-picked employees to his office. "Our COO, CFO, the vice president of HR, and I were all there. We talked to them one by one. The company has decided to send you to do a project, but you are required to leave your home, and you must not tell your parents or your boyfriend or your girlfriend. Do you agree?" Holed up in the small apartment, the team got to work. In taking on eBay, Jack wanted to preserve the element of surprise. Explaining his strategy, he dipped into his reservoir of martial arts stories. "I've seen lots of people yelling, 'Fight the Shaolin Temple!' at the foot of the Shaolin Temple. That's complete nonsense. However, if I reach your doorstep to challenge you, I pretty much know that I will defeat you. In the future, there will be no need to yell. As soon as you stand on the doorstep, people will be scared." Throughout the project, Jack emphasized that their target was not HNET, but eBay itself. Once the project became public knowledge, he wanted to ensure the fight was seen as a David versus Goliath struggle. One team member recalled the mood. "We were just a group of country bumpkins, and our competitor was eBay." Reuters later summed up the culture as kung fu commerce with a dash of theater. To keep up morale, the small group of software engineers took breaks between coding to play video games or do exercises. Jack encouraged the team to do handstands. As a child, he explained, looking at the world upside down had given him a different perspective on life. The new business was to be named Hunting for Treasure, or Taobao in Chinese. Taobao.com's tagline was, "There is no treasure that cannot be hunted out, and there is no treasure that cannot be sold." Taobao was officially launched on May 10, 2003, celebrated each year as Ali Day, a Take Your Family to Work Day, and the date of the company's famous group wedding celebration. Ali Day celebrates the team spirit that helped Alibaba overcome an unexpected challenge that tested its employees as never before. SARS attacks. The SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, virus outbreak started in southern China in 2002, spreading to create clusters of infection around the world that caused 8,000 people to fall sick, as well as almost 800 deaths. Several thousand of those infected, and most of those who died, were located in mainland China and Hong Kong. In Hangzhou, 400 employees in Alibaba's head office underwent voluntary isolation at home after one of their colleagues, Kitty Song Jie, fell ill with a suspected case of SARS. She had traveled to Guangzhou, the epicenter of the outbreak, as part of an Alibaba team participating in the biannual Canton Fair. SARS bound an already close company even closer. Because its origins and full impact were unknown, SARS was a frightening experience, as I experienced myself in Beijing at the time. The outbreak also bound people together. In early May, Jack donned one of the face masks that the company had distributed to all its employees and initiated a plan that confined all of its employees at home for 1 week. Soon after they were sent home, Alibaba's office was sealed off to avoid any risk of infections from exposure to the suspected case. In a letter to employees distributed that day, Jack's ability to inspire the troops and to keep them focused on the company's goals was on full display. "We care for each other and we support each other. We never forget the mission and obligation of Alibaba in face of the challenge from SARS. Tragedy will pass, but life will continue. Fighting with catastrophe cannot prevent us from fighting for the enterprise we love." Although it sickened thousands and killed almost 800 people, the outbreak had a curiously beneficial impact on the Chinese internet sector, including Alibaba. SARS validated digital mobile telephony and the internet, and so came to represent the turning point when the internet emerged as a truly mass medium in China. The virus gave a major boost to texting, which increased business for cellular companies like China Mobile. However, SARS also boosted the three Chinese internet portals, thanks to revenue-sharing agreements with the telecom company. As the shares in Sina, Sohu, and NetEase began to climb, investor interest in Chinese technology companies was suddenly reignited. Cell phone usage wasn't the only thing to benefit. Broadband internet access got a huge lift too, as millions of people confined to their homes or dormitories for days or weeks on end looked to the internet for information or entertainment. Within days of home confinement, Alibaba employees had internet connections installed at home, while the Hangzhou authorities supplied food and twice daily disinfection visits. Employees continued their work, holding virtual meetings in online chat rooms. Reliable information about SARS was hard to come by, especially in the early months of the outbreak, when China's official media, including state broadcaster China Central Television, stayed mute. Instead, people looked to their cell phones and PCs to learn about the virus and the best ways to protect themselves. Crucially for Alibaba, SARS convinced millions of people, afraid to go outside, to try shopping online instead. The suspected case of SARS within the company turned out not to be infected by the virus after all, and so for Alibaba, SARS ended up a blessing in disguise. Because the Taobao stealth team had relocated to work in the lakeside apartment, they were not affected by the quarantine of the main office. Jack was still confined at home and unable to join the Taobao team for the May 10th launch, as he later recalled, "A few of us agreed to talk on the phone at 8 p.m. and raised our glasses in the air and said, 'Wishing Taobao a safe journey.' The day that Taobao was launched, there was a line on the website that declared, 'Remembering those who worked hard during SARS.'" Taobao. Although Taobao was launched on May 10th, visitors to the website could not discern any connection with Alibaba. Taobao made a virtue of its startup status by relying on word-of-mouth marketing to popularize the site, including postings on the many free bulletin board systems and other online forums popular in China at the time. Taobao's association with Alibaba was kept so well hidden that a number of Alibaba employees even voiced concerns to management about a potential new rival on the scene. Jack recalled, "We have a very active intranet. In late June, someone posted a message asking the company's senior management to pay attention to one website, which might become our competitor in the future." Soon, the Alibaba intranet was alive with discussions about who was behind Taobao and employees commenting on the disappearance of some of their colleagues. Finally, on July 10, 2003, Alibaba announced that Taobao was part of the company. "There was a resounding cheer within the company," Jack recalled. "The cat was out of the bag, and with the full resources of Alibaba at its disposal, Taobao was now free to take on eBay." Yet Jack wanted Taobao to maintain an innovative startup culture, something aided by a preemptive move by eBay to try to sew up the market. eBay signed exclusive advertising contracts to promote its site on all the major China internet portals, preventing them from displaying ads promoting rival sites. This forced Alibaba to adopt a series of guerrilla marketing techniques, including reaching out to hundreds of small but fast-growing sites and online communities that eBay had deemed unimportant. With the backing of SoftBank, Jack took a move from Yahoo Japan's playbook. In 1999, when it launched its e-commerce business, CEO Masahiro Inoue asked his 120 employees to list items for sale on his new site to make it look active and popular. 4 years later in China, Jack did the same. We had altogether 7-8 people in the Taobao team. Everyone had to find 4 items. I rummaged through my chests and cupboards. I barely had anything at home. We pooled about 30 items, and I bought yours and you bought mine. That's how it started. I even listed my watch online. Jack also insisted that Taobao maintain a distinctly local culture, including choosing nicknames from Jin Yong's novels or other popular tales. Taobao was successful at developing a whimsical culture and instilling a strong sense of teamwork. Yet, it would be years before Taobao would make any money. Fortunately, Alibaba could count on SoftBank's support once again. In February 2004, SoftBank led a new $82 million investment to replenish Alibaba's coffers in preparation for Taobao's long battle with eBay. This transaction also was the end of the road for Goldman Sachs. Shirley Lin had left the bank in May 2003. With no one to oversee the stake, Goldman had written down the value of its stake to zero. The following year, just before the new investment led by SoftBank, Goldman sold off its entire 33% stake. The bank had paid $3.3 million for it in 1999 and sold it for more than 7 times that amount 5 years later. This seemed like a good result at the time, although no one involved with the deal still remained at Goldman to take any credit. The investors who bought out the stake saw an immediate appreciation once SoftBank anteed up more funds for Taobao. Worse was to come for Goldman, though, when in 2014 the full extent of the mistake sank in. The stake the investment bank had paid $3.3 million for in 1999 would rise in value to more than $12.5 billion at the IPO had they held on to it. Worse still, the partners at the bank could calculate how much they personally had foregone. Some calculated their missed windfall at more than $400 million, quite a few mansions in the Hamptons. Along with SoftBank, other investors committing fresh funding to Alibaba included Fidelity Investments, Venture TDF, and new investor Granite Global Ventures, later known as GGV Capital, backed by Rockefeller affiliate Venrock. The deal was announced as part of a move to aggressively expand Taobao to make it the most popular online marketplace for Chinese retailers and individuals to list their products on the internet. Masayoshi's son publicly endorsed Alibaba's strategy. 4 years after SoftBank's initial investment in Alibaba, he declared himself extremely pleased and predicted that Alibaba has the potential to become another extraordinary success like Yahoo. Meanwhile, Alibaba disclosed that revenues from its Alibaba.com B2B site had grown threefold in the previous year, propelling that business at last to profitability. Despite the fresh backing for Taobao, eBay itself remained oblivious to the rising threat, considering itself far superior to this quirky local rival. When asked by Business Week in the spring of 2004 about rivals in China, eBay's Senior Vice President Bill Cobb mentioned only one, ePay, a joint venture between Yahoo and Sina. Jack reveled in being ignored. During the first year, eBay didn't consider us their rival. They didn't even think that we could be their rival. They thought, we haven't even heard about Alibaba. Such a strange name. Chinese all know what Taobao means. Foreigners don't. eBay was confident that its global network and experience would ensure each net pulled well clear of any competitors. But corporate bureaucracy, worsened by the extended and dysfunctional reporting lines all the way to San Jose, were to smother whatever embers of entrepreneurialism still burned within each net in Shanghai. eBay's China adventure, lasting from 2003 to 2006, is today a case study in how not to go about managing a business in a distant market. eBay's first mistake was to tell the market that China was already an ace in the hole. Meg Whitman deserved credit for recognizing China's potential as an internet market before that was popular. Her early interest in business opportunities in China was sparked by a family connection to the country. In the 1970s, my mom was invited to be part of a group of women, led by actress Shirley MacLaine, to visit China. There were lots of reasons not to go. China was then an undeveloped country that had been closed to outsiders for many years, and my mom had just 10 days to get ready. But instead of worrying about her safety, she seized the chance to have an adventure. Over 4 weeks, the group covered 2,000 miles in China, mostly by train, visiting schools, farms, and villages. Whitman recalled that the trip changed my mother's life and, indirectly, mine too. My mom learned Mandarin in subsequent years and returned to China 80 times. And after her first trip, she told my sister and me, "I've seen women doing all sorts of marvelous things, so realize you have the opportunity to do and be anything you want." Mary Meeker, then an internet analyst at Morgan Stanley, where she was dubbed the Queen of the Internet, was one of Meg Whitman's lead cheerleaders. The dot-com bust had dented the reputation of nearly the entire Wall Street tech research community, but China played a big role in Meeker's redemption. In April 2004, Morgan Stanley released a 217-page report under her name that profiled the Chinese internet sector. It would be reprinted more than 25,000 times. Meeker had a reputation for being a contrarian. "One of the greatest investments of our lifetime has been New York City real estate," she said, "and investors made the highest returns when they bought stuff during the 1970s and 1980s, when people were getting mugged. The lesson is that you make the most money when you buy stuff that's out of consensus." Whoever wins China wins the world. Meeker now saw China as the next big thing. Picking the right Chinese company to bet on wasn't easy, Meeker said, so she recommended instead that investors leverage Silicon Valley companies with exposure to China. Both Yahoo and eBay have interesting plays in the Chinese market. So our simplistic point of view is that one way to play the Chinese market is by owning Yahoo or eBay. The report quoted Whitman, raising the stakes, as predicting, "Whoever wins China will win the world." Meeker's vocal support for Whitman, including cheering on her China strategy, helped boost eBay's share price by 80% in 2004. But the climbing valuation obscured growing challenges for the company. A series of hikes in commissions sparked protests from its virtual store merchants, tens of thousands clubbing together to denounce FeeBay or GreedBay. Complaints reached a crescendo in February 2005 when eBay increased commissions by almost 3% to 8% on its worldwide mall. Whitman remained sanguine. "The thing to know about the eBay community is that it's been vocal from day one." She did concede, however, that the dissatisfied merchants had perhaps been a tad more vocal than in the past. China became a useful way of distracting eBay's investors from problems at home. Worse, before the company had even secured its position there, a "we're winning in China" attitude at both eBay and its newly acquired business PayPal ensured a form of collective denial, even when confronted with signs that things were not going to plan. China was considered so important that managers, keen to present a positive story to Whitman and other senior executives, made sure that everything looked great on PowerPoint and sounded smooth on conference calls. But thanks to its own missteps, as well as Alibaba's competitive moves, this was increasingly at odds with the facts on the ground. eBay's biggest mistake was in getting the culture wrong. A leave-it-to-the-experts attitude demoralized the original Eachnet team in Shanghai, as eBay executives were parachuted in from headquarters in San Jose or other parts of the eBay empire. No matter how skilled the new arrivals, most spoke no Chinese. They faced a steep learning curve to understand the local market. Key EachNet team members started to leave, their exit interviews revealing concerns that San Jose no longer involved them in key decisions. eBay had sent over a number of China-born executives, but most had studied or worked in the United States for many years, sparking misunderstandings or friction with the local team. EachNet found itself at a serious disadvantage to the 100% local Taobao. This gap was reflected in the design of the two rivals' websites. eBay moved quickly to align the EachNet site with its global site, revamping how products were categorized and altering the design and functionality of the website. This not only confused customers, but also alienated a number of important merchants who saw their previously valuable China account names had been deleted. This invalidated their trading history and forced them to scramble to reapply for new names on an unfamiliar global platform. Worse still, the Chinese website lacked a customer service telephone number. eBay's China site, modeled closely on eBay in the States, looked foreign to local users, who found it empty when compared to local sites. In website design, culture matters. In the West, websites like Google had become popular for their clean lines and uncluttered negative space. But to the mass market of Chinese web users accustomed to pop-ups and floating banner ads, they seemed static and dull. As you can see for yourself by opening Taobao.com, successful Chinese websites are typically packed with information and multimedia graphics, requiring many scroll downs to see the whole page. From its outset, Taobao has been a website built by Chinese for Chinese, and it worked. It's not just the graphics that help Taobao connect with consumers. Taobao structured its website like a local bazaar, even featuring innovative ideas such as allowing male or female shoppers to click on a button to display products most suited to their interests. The design of the site makes it the virtual descendant of the Yiwu wholesale market, where Jack and many other Zhejiang entrepreneurs draw their inspiration. The founder of another niche e-commerce venture explained, "If you go to Yiwu, you can order as little as 3 pairs of shoes. One factory specializes in soles, another in the uppers, another factory, or perhaps a small village, specializes in the laces." Taobao tapped the motivation of those small merchants to make money. For companies like eBay and Amazon, their experience in the United States and other Western markets proved to be of little use. "E-commerce in China is very strange," the rival e-commerce founder continued. "It started with C2C, consumer to consumer, and with non-standardized products. This was unlike Amazon, unlike the conventional wisdom where you need to start with standardized products like books. The more standardized the supply chain, the higher the barriers for e-tailers. All the smaller mom-and-pop stores selling non-standardized products are more accommodating, more flexible in supplying goods. That's unique to China. The lack of national supply chains removed the barriers to entry that exist in the West, making it possible for individuals to make money. By starting with C2C, it made the price factor very appealing. Individuals can be happy to make even 5 Mao, less than 1 US cent, on a sale." Again, aided by its roots in Zhejiang, Taobao outsmarted eBay by having a better understanding of the country's merchants, for whom membership has been free of charge from the outset. Just as free listings was a core principle for the B2B Alibaba.com, it became a key competitive weapon for Taobao.com, too. Buyers pay nothing to register or transact. Sellers pay nothing to register, list their products, or sell online. EachNet had started out with free listings, but faced with spiraling costs in August 2001, it started to charge listing fees to sellers, adding commissions on all transactions the following year. These resulted in a sharp reduction in the number of auctions on the site, but given the state of the VC markets, EachNet management felt they had no choice. The decision to start charging fees, core to eBay's model, ironically fueled its interest in buying EachNet. But once eBay was in charge in China, it pushed the fee culture much more aggressively than Bo and his team. eBay's vice president for global marketing, Bill Cobb, summed it up. "We're mainly interested in making sure that we structure this to have long-term sustainability. We have the essential eBay format, the insertion fees, final value fees, and features fees, though at a lower level." Meanwhile, Taobao's decision to forego charging fees was not without risk, since it forced it to look to other ways of generating revenues, especially if the site became popular and drove up operating costs. But making the site free for both shoppers and merchants turned out to be the key factor in ensuring Taobao's triumph over eBay. A research paper that analyzed more than a decade's worth of transaction data on Taobao concludes that in the early phase of the company's history, attracting merchants, who in China are especially allergic to paying fees, was more important than attracting shoppers. Taobao's popularity was fueled by a virtuous circle. More merchants and product listings meant more shoppers were attracted to the site, which meant more merchants and products, etc. In addition to being popular with consumers, offering free services ensured that Taobao was not distracted by a persistent problem that plagued HNet from the beginning: worrying about how to prevent vendors and consumers from figuring out ways to use the website simply as a place to connect with one another, then conducting their transactions offline or through other means. As Taobao charged no fees, they had no incentive to police this behavior. On the contrary, Taobao actively encouraged communications between the transacting parties by setting up bulletin boards and, beginning in June 2004, launching an embedded proprietary chat window with the, unfortunately in English, named Ali Wang Wang. Buyers on the site use the service to haggle with sellers, which resonates well with the vibrant marketplace culture in China. Communication is a key underpinning of commerce, but eBay users struggled to communicate with vendors. Designed with input from Taobao users, Ali Wang Wang is an early example of the type of consumer-driven innovation that drives successful technology firms in China today, such as the role that cell phone vendor Xiaomi's fan club plays in suggesting new product features. To this day, Ali Wang Wang remains a popular feature on Taobao, allowing consumers to maintain their own list of personal purveyors, one, say, for cosmetics, another for baby formula, who are at their beck and call around the clock. Customer service on Taobao is so good that it can be overwhelming. A purchase on Taobao is often accompanied by a flurry of messages on Ali Wang Wang, a series of virtual bows and scrapes from merchant to customer who may have a hard time exiting the conversation. But whatever the pull of Taobao, a decision by eBay in September 2004 would serve to push many of HNet's customers away. eBay executives in San Jose decided to migrate the China website to the United States. Instead of hosting the website close to customers in China, it was shifted to the States. In a borderless internet, where a website is hosted shouldn't matter. But China's is not a borderless internet. Today, the Chinese government is actively promoting its vision of internet sovereignty around the world, a rejection of the idea that a nation-state's virtual borders should be less meaningful than its actual frontiers. In China, the effects of the government's long-standing efforts to build and extend the Great Firewall of China often means websites hosted overseas are much slower to load than those hosted in China itself. All web traffic accessing sites hosted outside the mainland has to go through a series of choke points where the request is screened. This is to ensure that a foreign website does not display material the Chinese government deems sensitive, including the three T's: Tibet, Taiwan, and Tiananmen Square. These and other sensitive topics, such as unrest in Xinjiang, are widely thought to have been the reason that China has blocked some of the world's leading websites, from Twitter to YouTube to Facebook, and, increasingly, Google. While e-commerce and online shopping typically don't touch on these sensitive areas, the Great Firewall can often ensnare or seemingly block even anodyne activities or requests. For example, Once eBay had moved its servers outside China, a user who happened to have a 64 or an 89 as part of his or her username might see their account blocked or be unable to access the internet, the reason being that both numbers automatically trigger the censors in China as part of the effort to block any mentions of the events in Tiananmen Square on June 4, 1989. 6489. eBay had its reasons for the migration. As the business grew in China, the engineers in San Jose worried whether the platform built by a Shanghai-based startup could cope. It turned out that EachNet had built robust technology, capable of scaling up by even 100 times. But after a series of site outages that had damaged its reputation at home, eBay had become obsessed with the stability of its platform. eBay pushed ahead with the China migration anyway. The attraction of a unified worldwide site with a consistent set of features was just too hard to resist. Some senior executives within eBay already knew that migration would be a mistake. The company had already seen the damaging impact in Taiwan. But bizarrely, eBay managers in Taipei were blocked by migration-obsessed managers in San Jose from sharing their experience with the team in Shanghai. As predicted, as soon as the China site was migrated and integrated into the global site, the impact on EachNet's traffic was disastrous. It dropped off precipitously. Customers in China started to experience long delays and timeouts on the site. Why would they bother to wait for eBay in China, a site that charged fees, when Taobao was available instantly and for free? Migration was also costly for eBay because the company typically carried out maintenance of its servers every Thursday at midnight on the West Coast, ahead of the peak traffic of Friday. But this meant the disruption happened at the peak of China traffic, 15 hours ahead of San Jose. EachNet tried to adjust the maintenance schedule, but with no success. Meg Whitman had made China a key priority for eBay. But when migration caused traffic in China to plummet, no one told her. She found out only a month later on a visit to Shanghai, and she was furious at not having been kept informed. Things quickly spiraled out of control for the company in China. Once the website had been migrated to the United States, all modification requests from engineers in China were stacked up in what the company called a train seat system. Departments would submit their requests for changes, and like an assembly line process, these were then lined up and consolidated into a train of needs. Changing one word on the site would take 9 weeks. Changing one feature would take 1 year. How could eBay be so inefficient? There are two explanations. First, eBay had an effective monopoly in the States, and this bred complacency. Second, despite its Silicon Valley aura, eBay was never very strong at technology. One eBay executive famously said in public, "Even a monkey could run this business." After the embarrassing site outages, stability and process trumped technology. Once Taobao appeared on the scene, eBay's train seat system quickly became a train wreck. EachNet executives desperately tried to signal the danger to senior executives in San Jose, but to no avail. Although Taobao had its merits, Alibaba could hardly believe its luck as the ineptness of this supposedly world-renowned company became apparent. Jack compared eBay's lumbering approach to a jumbo jet. A global technology platform sounds great, like a Boeing 747 flying is great. But if the airport is a schoolyard, you cannot land. Even if you want to change a button, you have to report to, like, 14 guys. Looking back on the fiasco 8 years later in her new role as CEO of Hewlett-Packard, Meg Whitman was contrite about eBay's missteps in China. "You've got to have a set of products uniquely designed for this market by Chinese. It is not a market where you can take a product or a system that works in Europe or the United States and export to China." She also concedes that migration was the fatal blow to eBay's China ambitions. "We made one big mistake. We should have left EachNet on their own platform in China. Instead, what we did was put EachNet onto the global eBay platform because it had worked everywhere," It had worked in Western Europe. It had worked all over. We had bought all these baby eBays and basically migrated them to one common platform, which had a lot of advantages. One is cost. Second is speed to market, because when you roll buy it now, you could roll it to 30 countries as opposed to do it incrementally. But we made a mistake in China. She gives credit to Alibaba's achievements in designing Taobao to suit the local market. They had a uniquely Chinese platform. And by the way, they didn't charge anything for years and years and years and years. And they just out-executed us. After Bo stepped down, eBay struggled to find a replacement, going through a series of executives, from James Zheng to a Taiwanese-born American, Martin Wu, newly hired from Microsoft China, who would last only 12 months. Whitman today rues the loss of the entrepreneur who had founded EachNet. What I would have done is left Bo Xiao in charge and owned the 30% of China that we originally owned and let him do his own thing. Sensing eBay's disarray in China, Jack pushed ahead. At a four-hour session in a stadium in Hangzhou in September 2004 to celebrate Alibaba's fifth birthday, Jack rallied all 2,000 employees of Alibaba, including the fast-growing Taobao team, who held aloft flags emblazoned with worker ants, the mascot of Taobao. The ant was chosen to symbolize how even the smallest creatures can prevail over their enemies, provided they work closely together. The assembled masses then held hands and chanted a song, True Heroes, whose lyric, "You have to go through a thunderstorm to see a rainbow, and no one can succeed easily," was a reference to the challenge of SARS that they had overcome. This was followed by, "The ants that unite can beat an elephant," after which everyone headed off to a disco, where Jack danced on the bar into the wee hours. The elephant in the room was, of course, eBay. From the moment he conceived of Taobao, Jack maintained a relentless focus on the company. In a much-quoted analogy, Jack commented to Forbes magazine in 2005, "eBay may be a shark in the ocean, but I am a crocodile in the Yangtze River. If we fight in the ocean, we lose. But if we fight in the river, we win." The tide was turning against eBay. From a market share of more than 90% in 2003, eBay's market share fell by half the following year, barely ahead of Taobao. And there was another problem for eBay: online payment. On October 18, 2003, just 5 months after the launch of Taobao, Alibaba rolled out Alipay, its own payment solution. Although it was rudimentary, reminiscent of the early days of Alibaba's customer log 3 years earlier, it proved an instant hit with customers. Lucy Pang, a co-founder of Alibaba, is today CEO of Ant Financial, the Alibaba affiliate that controls Alipay. In 2012, at a talk I moderated for her at Stanford University, she reflected on the launch of the service. "The simple escrow model established a trust system in online shopping during its early stages. This was a very primitive model. During Alipay's initial operations, one department had a fax machine. After clients wired monies via banks or post offices, they had to fax bank slips to Taobao. We would then double-check and confirm. It would be 3 months before eBay woke up to the threat of Alipay. In January 2004, PayPal assembled a task force in San Jose to pick up on EachNet's earlier unsuccessful efforts to devise an escrow solution. In the United States, eBay had shelled out $1.4 billion to buy PayPal in 2002, but it was slow to integrate the company and roll it out to China. To be fair to PayPal, regulatory obstacles in China were an important factor in the delay. The country's banking sector is closely guarded by the government. Also, China's currency is not freely convertible, meaning that foreign payment providers are banned from facilitating international transactions or offering credit. PayPal struggled to come up with workarounds to these challenges, including local partnerships. PayPal had started out in the United States as a huge risk-taker, legendary for its swashbuckling founders and early executives, today often referred to as the PayPal Mafia, Peter Thiel, Reid Hoffman, co-founder of LinkedIn, and, after they bought his payments company, Elon Musk, Tesla Motors, SpaceX, SolarCity. But within eBay and far from home, PayPal would struggle in China from the outset. Attempts to figure out a way forward for the company in China were complicated when PayPal was sued for alleged patent infringement in the United States by AT&T, causing new work on escrow solutions to grind to a halt. To keep momentum on solving the China problem, eBay's newly established China Development Center initiated its own proposed escrow product called Anfu Tong, AFT. The idea was that while PayPal was tied up with the lawsuit in the States, AFT could be deployed as a stopgap solution. Finally, in December 2004, eBay could provide an answer to Alipay and deployed AFT in China. But by then, PayPal had resolved the AT&T lawsuit and wanted to deploy its own solution, not AFT. Meanwhile, Alibaba hadn't been standing still, rolling out a steady stream of improvements to Alipay, including popular text message notifications to inform customers of successful payments and, working with domestic logistics companies, shipments as well. Alibaba's Iron Triangle was beginning to take shape. For Alan Tien, a Stanford-educated engineer working on PayPal's China efforts since 2004, the AFT-PayPal infighting and the disastrous migration of servers to the United States were the beginning of the end for eBay in China. In a series of internal memos to the head office, he tried to raise attention to the seriousness of the threat from Alibaba and Alipay. In January 2005, he wrote, "Current situation isn't good. Momentum has shifted away from us. Must execute on get well plan to stay in the fight," adding, "We cannot afford to deceive ourselves anymore." eBay just wouldn't take Alibaba seriously, questioning the reliability of mounting data that showed Taobao was selling more goods than eBay in China. Taobao now had more listings, but eBay convinced itself that because those listings were free, they must be inferior. Jack vigorously rejected that thesis. The survival and growth of Taobao are not because of free service. ePay, the joint venture of Yahoo and Sina, is also free, but it is nowhere close to Taobao. Taobao is more eBay than eBay China because Taobao pays more attention to user experiences. Sensing it was game over, Alan Tien concluded, "Taobao's product development cycle is much faster. Jack Ma's right. We cannot fight on his terms." Whitman had reached the same conclusion and secretly began to look for a way out of the China morass. The most obvious route was to make an offer to buy Alibaba, and so she sent three senior executives from San Jose to Hangzhou, where they met Jack and Zhou. The meeting got off to a bad start when eBay Senior Vice President Bill Cobb talked down Taobao's achievements, and CFO Rajiv Dutta offered a lowball number of $150 million to buy the company. After Jack told the eBay delegation that he was just getting started with Taobao, Zhou countered with a sales price of $900 million, at which point the two sides parted company. Having failed to buy its rival, Meg Whitman announced an infusion of an additional $100 million into its China operations. This was prompted out of fear of Taobao, but Whitman spun it to investors as a positive. "The China internet market is developing more rapidly than anticipated. We see even greater opportunities in China today than we did 6 months ago." The $100 million was to be spent upgrading the credit system, hiring personnel, and splashing out a new advertising campaign that soon blanketed billboards in China's major cities. This was music to Jack's ears. He joked to Forbes magazine that eBay had deep pockets, but we will cut a hole in their pocket. Talking to Chinese media, he ridiculed the new investment. "When I heard that eBay would spend $100 million to break into this market, I didn't think they had any technical skills. If you use money to solve problems, why on earth would the world need businessmen anymore? Businessmen understand how to use the smallest resources to expand." Even with SoftBank's backing, Jack didn't have the resources that eBay could bring to China if it wanted. Dismissing eBay's approach, he added, "Some say that the power of capital is enormous. Capital does have its power, but the real power is the power of people controlling the capital. People's power is enormous. Businessmen's power is inexhaustible." Having earlier ignored them, eBay was now paying a lot of attention to Alibaba. Jack later commented that he saw this as a decisive moment. The moment she, Meg Whitman, wanted to use money as her strategy, we knew she would lose. First, they didn't consider us as a rival. Then they treated us too seriously as a rival. Neither of them was the right strategy. When we say, if you have no enemy in your heart, you will be invincible in the world, we mean you have different strategies and tactics. In terms of strategies, you must pay attention. Whenever there is a rival emerging, you have to study whether it could become your rival, and if so, what to do. Whatever is stronger than you, you have to learn not to hate it. When you treat it too seriously as a rival and intend to kill it, your techniques are completely exposed. Hatred only makes you a short-sighted person. In May 2005, Meg Whitman and a number of other key Silicon Valley executives, including Jerry Yang, traveled to Beijing to attend the Fortune Global Forum. There, Whitman met up with Jack and Joe. But further talks, which include a proposal for eBay to invest in Taobao, came to nothing. At PayPal China, the mood was darkening, with Alan Tien writing to colleagues, "I think it's absolutely frightening that eBay doesn't take these threats more seriously. Taobao Alipay has grabbed the mantle as the auctions payments leader in China. We are caught on our heels every time. Yet instead of developing a leapfrog or even a flanking strategy, we try to match feature for feature 6 to 9 months later." While eBay was trying to put on a good face, Whitman was growing increasingly frustrated at the AFT PayPal infighting, warning that PayPal China is coming to a town near you, whether you like it or not. Although this may be suboptimal for Marketplace, it's good for eBay Inc. to have two horses in this race. Instead of picking AFT or PayPal, eBay had decided to go with both, meaning customers in China would have to navigate not one, but two websites when buying online. Not surprisingly, running two payment systems in parallel in China proved to be a disaster. Customer complaints flooded in, such as, "My experience on eBay was painful. Can't fill order information. I'm a 100% good feedback user. I was never delinquent and never broke the rules. The payment systems used to be pretty good." Another customer vented, "I can't stand it anymore. Does EachNet call this customer service? They can only scare away more users. Did my two payments totaling 5,000 yuan disappear? My confidence in EachNet is once again severely blown." One customer even complained that his PayPal check was impounded by the Bank of China in Nanjing under a law to prevent overseas criminals from money laundering through this method. By the middle of 2005, Taobao had facilitated online payments for 80% of the products on its sites, but eBay barely 20%. In a last-ditch attempt to turn things around, Whitman and a number of key executives relocated temporarily from San Jose to Shanghai for a couple of months. With the concentration of senior executives, Shanghai was quickly dubbed Shang Jose within eBay. But its China business was looking increasingly like a lost cause. eBay shifted its focus to new horizons, including the landmark $2.6 billion acquisition in September 2005 of Skype. In China, things went from bad to worse when Taobao reaffirmed its commitment to a no-fee model. Extending its pledge of free services for a further 3 years, Taobao vowed to create 1 million jobs in China. eBay's PR executive, Henry Gomez, fired off a terse press release titled, "A Statement from eBay Regarding Taobao's Pricing Challenge," which consisted of the following three sentences. "Free is not a business model. It speaks volumes about the strength of eBay's business in China that Taobao today announced that it is unable to charge for its products for the next 3 years." We're very proud that eBay is creating a sustainable business in China while providing Chinese consumers and entrepreneurs with the safest, most professional, and most exciting global trading environment available today. Whitman and her COO, Maynard Webb, already knew that the global product wasn't working in China, so they initiated a new project to launch the best e-commerce site in China from scratch. They called the initiative De Nuevo, which means from scratch or anew in Spanish. After all the talk about being more sensitive to local culture in China, adopting a Spanish name for the project hardly inspired confidence. By the end of 2005, eBay's market share had slipped to barely one-third of the market, and Taobao was closing in on 60%. Just 2 months after eBay publicly defended its fee-based business model, eBay stopped charging fees altogether. Having talked up China so much to investors, eBay's struggles there started to weigh on its share price, which dropped dramatically from a high of over $46 in early 2006 to only $24 by August. Jack didn't pull any punches. In China, they're gone. They have made so many mistakes in China. We're lucky. Having failed to team up with Taobao, Whitman launched discussions to sell eBay's China business to the Li Ka-shing-backed venture Tom Online, finally abandoning its troubled business by leaving it in a minority-owned joint venture, along with $40 to $50 million in cash. It left a note, in the form of a press release, that, true to form, attempted to spin an obvious negative as a positive. The joint venture, it read, left eBay even better positioned to participate in this growing market. This agreement is a sign of our continued commitment to delivering the best online buying and selling experiences in China. The venture quickly faded into obscurity. eBay had lost China. But in Jack, China had gained a folk hero. When asked today about the experience, Whitman can only tip her hat to Jack's achievements. If you look at Japan and China, two important markets, it's where we didn't strategically actually do the right thing. But it was not obvious at the time, honestly. So more power to Jack Ma. What a powerful franchise he has built. And it is really in some ways the combination of eBay, PayPal, and Amazon. He's done a remarkable, remarkable job. eBay had lost a few $100 million on its China folly, but this would soon look like small change to Alibaba, thanks to a $1 billion deal that Jack pulled off thanks to another Silicon Valley giant, Yahoo!